Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, we started a conversation last week looking at the side-by-side comparison of the will or the trust. What's the difference? How do they work? Can they both accomplish the same things? We talked about avoiding probate, getting a specific item to a specific person. Does the spouse and kids get everything when I die? Seems like both vehicles work okay on that. So you want to continue this look this week at the will or the trust.
Yeah. And so just as a quick summary, which you did right there, but also kind of more on a what can each instrument do. So a will is a little more of a rudimentary document. It lists the information about who the family is. It'll list who gets what. So what if there are specific items like what we talked about last week. So head over to the website, legacyandfaith.com, pick up with what we discussed last week. And so a will can make sure that we get something to a specific person, and it can list the final beneficiaries, right? The other thing it does well is that it names who is going to close my estate. And so that's a good thing. And then a lot of the other parts of a will are instructions to the court to make sure that to the greatest extent we can say, hey, court, we appreciate that you're there, but stay out of our business to the greatest extent possible. Mm. All right. And then a trust is a holding container is the best way to think of a trust. It's like a cup, which is that the cup represents the trust itself, the instructions. And so then we move our assets into the name of the trust. And when it's retitled, when the name on the asset is now the trust name instead of my personal name, now the instructions of the trust bind to that specific asset. And so there are some major differences, which is a will is a document that only comes to life when someone dies. The trust, however, can give instructions during a person's lifetime and instructions for what happens when they die.
Now, doesn't in a trust scenario, doesn't it have a will also? Isn't there like a will in the trust?
Well, yes, but now you're starting to take some of our thunder to moving on to our next questions.
Okay.
So with that wonderful introduction, why don't we just introduce the next question, because that's going to be the misnomer.
Okay. Well, the next idea, the thing you want to accomplish is to make sure my minor children are taken care of. Can both a will and a trust accomplish this?
And so this is a trick question, because a guardianship, so in other words, we need to address when you have minor children, what happens should I die? Who takes over and makes sure that the children are okay? So the reason this is a trick question is twofold. Number one, it's a trick question because a court must be involved. So one of our questions was, can I avoid the probate process? That was from last week. Well, if you have minor children, the answer is absolutely no way. Because if you have minor children, we must have the legal process enacted in order to get the new guardian over the children. So with minor children, we must go through a final hearing to ensure that the minor child is well taken care of. In other words, we need the new parent to have legal authority. We need the guardian to be bound by the court so that they have all the rights over that child. And that can only be done by a court. It can't be done just by writing something on a napkin. So therefore, and those instructions then must be housed in the will. Okay, so we always put guardianships in the will. We don't put guardianship information in the trust. So therefore, every trust must have a backup will, specifically with minor children. So it's just that when we use a will in conjunction with a trust, it's called a pour-over will, meaning if I left anything in my name, so it's dealing with the assets primarily, if I left anything in my name, I meant to get it into the name of my trust because that's where all my instructions are. So go pour this asset into my trust now. So
We don't think of kids as being an asset.
But, no, not yet.
Because they're living beings.
Yeah, but it also in that pour over will, we would need to have guardianship information. Mm. Okay, so the will, so that's why it's a trick question, but that's only one of the two issues of why it's a trick question. So number one, it's a trick question because you have to name guardianships in a will. And so therefore, every trust also has a will to make sure that if we ever landed in court, that is the will is the entrance to court. So therefore, a trust in and of itself cannot accomplish guardianship information. But here is the trick question. Here's why it's a trick question number two, is that there's two parts to guardianship. One is called the guardian over the person. The other one is the conservatorship over the finances. So a lot of wills will put in a makeshift trust. Hey, don't let my kids have the money until they're 25 if I die, right? Because otherwise, by law, if you name a minor child as a beneficiary, they will get it when they're 18. And the court will sneak in and watch over that money until they're 18. So if you want a really bad scenario, have minor children and don't have any planning. Mm. Okay? And then set up your plan that the kids get it, either through beneficiary designation. So when someone gets divorced, their instinct is, oh, I'm going to put my kids on as my beneficiaries because now I'm ticked at my ex-spouse and I don't want them to get it. They used to be my beneficiaries, so we do a knee-jerk reaction of, I'm going to put my kids on as my beneficiary. Well, that could be a really bad setup. It's actually much, much better if you come and sit down and actually do your planning. So
why is that a bad setup?
Because if they're minors and something happens to you, your minor child is getting now now they are the beneficiaries of everything you have. And now the court is going to come in and clamp that down. Mm. Okay. So anytime you have minor children as beneficiaries, it's bad. Now, we get the money to the right people again. But I don't think most parents want their 18-year-old who just lost their parent, who went through emotional trauma and now has to go to someone else. I don't think that's the person that we want to hand money to when they're 18. Mm. And that's what the law says. And by the way, there's just no way around it. There are some accounts that allow you to elect to hold a minor's account until they're 21, okay? So there are some accounts that allow you to elect a 21, but in the legal system, it's 18. Hmm. So therefore, we want to make sure that if you have minor children, that you're really taking this step of estate planning seriously. I know specifically when you're in your 30s and have small kids that you never think you're going to die, and death is like, it is never going to touch me. But that's just not the reality we live in because we live in a fallen world. And so therefore, we need to be wise and get estate planning underneath us at all times. So the thing is that we throw trusts into a will to say, make sure that this money is not given to the kid until they're a certain age. And that's where a trust, actually a revocable living trust, would actually be far more powerful, is that we make sure that the guardianship issue of the children is taken care of, that that someone else is now going to step in and be the pseudo parent over that child's life. But now a trust is much more expressive in detailing how do we handle the money for that minor child or for those minor children in a long period of time versus the will or the probate system typically has a very hardcore date of just saying, here you go, here's your money. And so this is where a trust would be far more beneficial in preparing financially long-term how to be successful with that money instead of a minor child just getting it at the age of 18 when they become a legal adult.
Okay, so in the side-by-side comparison, then the trust works better for your children than the will does.
Well, for the financial part, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to have the will for the guardianship issue,
right,
which is why it's a trick question.
Right. There is a will in the trust.
Yes, but we always use a will in conjunction with a trust.
But a will by itself is not as powerful.
Well, it may not be. And okay. So therefore, dealing with the money – a trust is going to be more expressionate, and we typically are able to do more work within that instrument for minor children.
Okay, let's move on to the next side-by-side comparison. I want to not have the government take anything.
Yeah, this is I hear this actually quite a bit. I'm not quite sure where this thought process has come into, that if I don't have a will, that then the government will take it. And that's just not legally correct. Now, if you end up never having any beneficiaries, so if you don't have children and we can't find heirs that are connected to you, so you live a long life and all of your siblings have died or you only have one sibling. Let's make it really simple. Neither of you had children. Your sibling dies and then you pass away. And we really have run out of truly a bloodline. Well, there may be a case then to where the last beneficiary might be the state. But that's a real misnomer that somehow if you don't have a will, that Washington State is going to get it. That's not going to happen. Remember, if you don't have an instrument, one of these two instruments, a will or a trust, and by the way, when I say trust, I mean a revocable living trust. I do not mean an irrevocable trust. I mean a revocable living trust. So if you do not have either instrument, then there is a pecking order in the law of who gets your money.
Well, who gets your money then if you have no family, nobody? Who is the government? If the government doesn't get it, then who do they give it to?
Yeah, well, it
they just give it to whoever their current charitable list is? Or?
Well, no. The government would receive it as the final beneficiary, but it's that almost never happens, by the way. So it happens so infrequently that it's almost really not worth talking about in great length. But really the pecking order in law is that if I died and I have no children, then I go back up to my grandparents. And are my grandparents alive? No, they're not alive. Okay. And if at any point the answer is yes, then that person takes it. Okay. So I go back up to my grandparents. Are they alive? No. Then I go down to who did my grandparents have? I go to my parents. Are my parents alive? If the answer is no, then I go to my siblings. Okay, so I go from grandparents to parents, then I go to siblings. If I have no siblings or if they are no longer alive, then I follow the bloodline from my siblings down. And wherever I can find someone on that line, so let's say I have six cousins that are alive, and I've no heirs, then all six would take equally.
Okay.
So you just don't get to pick your favorite. Well, you get to pick your favorite. You get to pick them by doing your planning.
Right.
So if you do a will or if you do a trust, you can pick your favorite cousin to take it.
Mm-hmm.
But this comes back to, well, that's a messy system.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you really like me, then do that. Do no planning and only have cousins, and because I'll get paid a lot of money to search them all out. And so the only person who's going to win in this scenario is the attorney. And if there's anyone on an equal level of who we don't want to get our money, it would be the government and attorneys. So therefore, plan. So if you don't plan, then typically and unfortunately, it can create a legal mess, which means that the attorney is getting paid. It doesn't have to be me. I'm just saying that someone has to unwind the puzzle and find out who has the legal rights to make a claim upon the money.
Okay, very interesting discussion. The side-by-side comparison of the will or the trust, which works better for different things, or do they both accomplish the same thing? We'll be moving on to the question of I don't want to pay any taxes.
Oh, yeah.
Which instrument works best for that? We'll discuss that in a moment. People are intrigued. How do they get in touch with you, Paul?
Well, head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There are past podcasts, so tune into last week. So that's where you can find us on the website. We started this discussion. So head over to legacyandfaith.com. There's also ways to communicate with me, and there's upcoming educational opportunities as well.
Okay, legacyandfaith.com for that. Again, back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant, the host of the Legacy and Faith Show on KCIS, and I am inviting you to come out to a workshop about estate planning that I'm going to be hosting in person at Venture Church in Mill Creek. You can head over to my website, legacyandfaith.com, and find out more information, but it is going to be on Wednesday, September 1st at 7 p.m., again, at Venture Church. So head over, legacyandfaith.com, sign up for our educational workshop, meet me in person, and we're going to have an awesome time. Head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
Many families realize that with the passing of each generation, their family legacy is disappearing and they're feeling regret. To alleviate this heartache, Memories Worth Telling writes their family story and creates a beautiful heirloom book to preserve their unique history. Go to memoriesworthtelling.com to schedule your initial consultation and learn how they can capture your legacy. Once again, that's memoriesworthtelling.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant this week, looking at a side-by-side comparison of the two main tools that are used in estate planning. That's the will or the trust. And moving on to another scenario here, I don't want to pay any taxes. Which of these tools works best for that?
And, you know, we just got off talking about I don't want the government to get it. So I think that these two thought processes bleed together, which is, I don't want the government to get it if I don't create a plan. I think where that thought process comes, because remember I said that's really not possible. It's all such a small percentage chance that the government could actually lay hold of what you get as a beneficiary. Mm-hmm. That I think that where that thought process comes from is from the tax ideology, mm-hmm. which is, well, the government's going to tax me when I die. Well, that's true. It's possibly true. So let's pull that apart. There's two taxing authorities that we have to be concerned with. One is Washington State, and the other one is the federal government. So the U.S. versus Washington specifically. Now, each of those superpowers have a taxing system for estates. Neither of them have an inheritance tax. An inheritance tax is I think it's down to seven different states have an inheritance tax. And what that means is that if you get an inheritance, so you're the beneficiary, that you have to pay a tax from the beneficiary's seat, not the estate. So an estate tax is we look at what did somebody have when they passed away, and we have to do an inventory and valuations, and we have to come up with, okay, this person had blank many dollars. Their house was worth blank, their IRAs, their investments, their bank accounts, life insurance policies. That's one thing people forget is that, yes, life insurance policies, because you had control over the beneficiary, that counts as part of your estate. Do you have cryptocurrency? Do you have personal stuff? Do you own a business? Do you own multiple properties? So all of these things that people own need to be valued, and we come up with the person who died is worth blank many dollars, okay? If they're worth X many dollars, then you may need to file an estate tax return. Now, here's a bummer. If you own multiple properties, and let's say that the value of all those properties, the gross value of those properties is $3 million. But you have $2 million of mortgages on those. Okay, well, everyone's brain would go, oh, I only have $1 million. Okay, so here's the crazy part, which is Washington State says if you have more than $2,193,000, so that's the tax threshold, let's call it $2.2 million for easy math. So if you have more than that, you have to file an estate tax return on gross. It doesn't matter that you netted out below that. It matters whether you have a gross estate. Yes, exactly. So Mark is giving me a face here that no one else can see. And that's why I said yes, exactly. Because yes, that is dumb. But that's the way the system works. So on estate taxes, the real number is $2.2 million. Do you have more than $2.2 million? Now, if you're married, each of you get to claim that $2.2 million. Unless you use a will and you just simply give everything to your spouse. So here's where we start breaking down. In a will and in a married situation, most couples have joint bank accounts, joint investments. They own their house jointly. And then they name their spouse as their beneficiary on the IRA. So if someone dies and I give everything to my spouse, let's say I have $3 million. Well, I just blew a tax opportunity because I could have claimed when I died that I have $1.5 million and my wife has $1.5 million. Both of us would be under the tax threshold, right? Because it's a little over two. Sorry, I lose people when I throw numbers out. But the whole point is that because I simply used a will and gave everything to my spouse, I blew an opportunity to make sure that proper tax planning was involved in my estate plan. So here's where we start really differentiating between a will and a trust, which is a will is simply a check writing instrument. It simply moves money. And when you use a will, most people keep everything in their name or in their joint name with a spouse, which means it never gets to the will. So if I die and my house is jointly owned with my wife, she legally takes over that asset by law. And it never comes to my will because I had a joint owner. And so therefore, it's a probate runaround and it never comes to, sometimes we put tax language in a will. It's called a testamentary trust. Please don't use it. Here is where the trust actually begins to separate itself from a will instrument. That if you want to resolve tax issues, you cannot do it through a will. You simply cannot. And this is where I don't want the government to get my money starts to come into play, which is, yes, the government has an opportunity to get some of your money after your spouse dies if they don't do some fancy planning, which is more expensive than doing your base planning. So it's always cheaper to plan. I promise you, it's cheaper to plan. So we're back to this mantra of you got to do something. We have to sit down and discover whether or not if you have a tax problem, then we need to move you over into a trust instrument instead of using a will instrument. A will instrument is simply a check writing document. A trust is a holding container, and this is where we can become more expansive in our instructions, and we can start dealing with some of the tax complications. And so therefore, now the trust has taken a leg up. Now the trust has differentiated itself and it becomes the tool of choice when you have tax issues. So when do you have tax issues? If you've got about $1.5 million as a couple, and right now if you own a home and it's anywhere near paid off, that home is worth $600,000 lately in our market and it could be worth $1 million or more and shock you. And so... Heck, you're halfway there with just your house nowadays. So if you have more than $1.5 million, you need to start sitting down and thinking about tax planning because your assets will only grow over time if you are conservative with your assets. And so so here we finally have kind of a differentiating factor, which is, yep, when you start talking about taxes, we really need to start talking about a trust instrument as the favorable instrument and tool.
Yeah, and then you throw in that curveball you said about you have a house that's worth $600,000, but you have a $500,000 mortgage on it.
Yeah.
But it's still going to be counted as $600,000, not $100,000
that
you're responsible
for. Yeah, for the estate tax return.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. And so, yes, here specifically with taxes, this is where a trust instrument, in my opinion, you can find other estate planners who may have a little bit of a different opinion than me, and that's okay, that here is where I believe we need to start utilizing a trust instrument solely because you have been blessed with something. And we want to be good stewards of what we have been given. And so, therefore, to be a good steward, we need to make sure that we're not going to pay unnecessary taxes. Look, an estate tax is a tax for people who don't plan. It's unnecessary. Hmm. And I don't want to pay unnecessary taxes. I don't mind, actually. I'm an estate and tax attorney, and I don't mind paying taxes, but only taxes that are my fair portion, not unnecessary taxes. Estate planning can resolve unnecessary taxes. We just got to sit down and have the discussion.
People want to do that with you. They want to sit down and have a discussion about the will or the trust for them. And how do they do that, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. You can contact us through that. There's past podcasts and upcoming educational opportunities. Head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, always great stuff. Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant here on KCIS.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.